Crossing Borders, that's the theme of this year's York Early Music Festival. And on Radio 3 for the Early Music Show, I'm off to that glorious city to record musical treats from all over the world. Our coverage of the festival begins with a live edition, where I'll be talking to festival movers and shakers, and L'Aventura London will give us a sparkling taste of 18th century Portuguese and Brazilian music. There'll be an enthusiastic audience in the hall. Join them and me, Catherine Bott, for the Early Music Show, live from York. This lunchtime at 1 o'clock, here on BBC Radio 3.
But before that, just gone 12 o'clock, time for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Judith Carr is the creator of quite wonderful books for children, the Mog series, The Tiger Who Came to Tea, and When Hitler Stole Pink Rabbit. Judith was born in Berlin in the 20s, but 10 years later escaped Hitler's Germany with her parents and brother. Their father was a very distinguished writer and drama critic. She married the scriptwriter Nigel Neal of Quatermass fame, and their son Matthew won the Whitbread Book Award in 2000 for English Passengers. So, actually, rather a distinguished family already.
Yes, well, it's odd because I'm the daughter of a writer and the wife of a writer and now also the mother of a writer, but I don't really consider myself a writer. I think I'm a drawer. I like drawing. I always have done. But I did a bit of writing because of it all coming at me from different directions.
And did you find that when you were doing the drawings, you wanted to create the story yourself, since they came out of your imagination, presumably at the same time? So,
yes, in fact, I think the picture books, in fact, all the books started with my children. The Tiger Who Came to Tea was just a bedtime story I'd made up for my little daughter when she was 2 or 3. And it wasn't until they were both at school about 5 years later that I thought, well, I could perhaps turn that into a picture book. So the story came first.
Your own childhood is in many ways the stuff of drama because it was a pretty fraught time. And your father was very outspoken, wasn't he? I mean, he actually was widely respected as somebody who laid things out very clearly and concisely and with quite a scalpel-like pen.
He was also very funny, and that was really his strength. I mean, he was like Bernard Levin in that what he wrote about the plays that he reviewed was often so entertaining that people read it even if they had no intention of ever going to the theatre.
It's not often that we have a guest on the programme who can boast this many writing relatives, but it goes further than that because your first piece of music comes from your childhood and the music was written by your mother.
Yes, my mother was 30 years younger than my father and she was a composer. She had composed one opera, which I remember being taken to see when I was about 5. But then the next one, my father wrote the libretto, and she was very excited about this opera. She thought that she'd improved enormously since the earlier one, and she had just about finished it when we had to leave Germany, and it was never performed.
Because your family name, sorry to interrupt, but your family name wasn't originally Carr. That's a shortening, isn't it?
Well, my father's name originally was Kempner. But there was a dreadful poetess called Kempner, who was rather like McGonagall, and she was famous for her dreadful verse. And so when my father decided to become a writer, quite early on, I think he was first published at 20, he realised you couldn't be called Kempner, and he invented this name, as he thought, of a contraction of K-E-R-R, Kerr, and there was no other Kerr in Germany. And of course we came here and we found we were Scots.
So let's go back to the opera then. It was called Der Chronoplan.
Yes.
And it was about Einstein, wasn't it?
Yes. My father knew Einstein. Einstein was quite sociable. And he wrote this story about Einstein inventing a time machine. It begins with a great party at which he unveils this time machine. And he says, now, who's coming with me? And some of the people going with him were Bernard Shaw and a painter called Liebermann. And Richard Strauss, I think, went, and a couple of other people. And they set off in this time machine. And I don't know, they run out of fuel or something. Anyway, they crash land in England. And fortuitously, just at the very moment when Byron, who is only 17 and hasn't written anything of importance, is trying to get off with a sweet little girl, who is, I think, a sort of nanny. She's too prim, and Byron is reasonably fed up, and they say, well, come back with us to the present. Well, the present was the late 20s, and so he goes back with them, and at first is enchanted by this world. And he meets the granddaughter of the girl he was in love with. She's the very opposite, you know. She says, yes, okay, you know, what about Tuesday night sort of thing? Various things happen, and he's disillusioned, and they take him back to his time. And that's the story. But I remember hearing these various songs that she was composing, arias, trying them out on the piano and singing them. When I came home from school, she'd be doing it, and I can still sing them all. Now, she's very good at tunes, and so this is one of them. This is the one the girl sings in Byron's time.
Thank you.
That was an excerpt from Der Chronoplan by Julia Carr and Alfred Carr.
I should have said also, in relation to Einstein, my mother met him at a party, and so, as one does, she said to him, "What about this theory of relativity?" And he explained it to her, and she said she totally understood it at the time, but afterwards she couldn't quite remember it.
That's not bad, to have Einstein explain the theory of relativity to you.
She was very pretty.
Well, now, at about the same time as you were listening to Der Chronoplan, about sort of similar age, I think you have a neighbour next door to you now who is equally fixated, but this time by another opera, by Don Giovanni.
Yes, this boy is just 5, and they gave me a lift one day with the children in the back, and the mother hadn't yet switched on the ignition when he said, "I want Don Giovanni." And I didn't know what this was going to mean, but it was the last scene, and his mother had got it ready because she knew this was going to happen. So we listened to it, and then he said, "I want it again." And I think during the drive we heard it 3 times, to which I had no objection at all, because I think it's wonderful. But apparently when they get home, he sings it, and he even does the vibrato, according to his mother. And the latest thing he's done is he's got his 3-year-old brother to sing it with him as a duet. I haven't heard this, so I can't vouch for the quality.
This, of course, is that wonderful scene at the end, isn't it, when the commendatore statue comes. It's a terrifying.
It's terrifying, but they love it.
That tells one something, doesn't it, which you hardly need to be told, is that children love real drama in these stories.
Of course they do. Yes, that's what they like.
Dunque, che ferita non appena vuoi, la fiamma di un azzardo ascolta, il tempo non ha. Parla, parla, ascolta,
ascolta. vista.
Torto di viltà, cacciato mai sarò. Sento salir gli spiriti, dove sono quei morti, e foco piangerò.
Comeuppance of the Dawn. We heard Walter Kreppel singing the Commendatore, Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau, Don Giovanni, and Karl Kuhn, Leporello, with the Berlin Radio Symphony Orchestra, the Berlin Rias Chamber Chorus, conducted by Ferenc Fritzsche. That was the final scene from Mozart's Don Giovanni. Judith Carr, when you wrote When Hitler Stole Pink Rabbit, you presumably wanted to draw on those childhood experiences and explain them to a certain extent to children now. That it was a way of actually writing about that period?
Well, just about everything I've done, certainly at that time, was for my own children. Because you have children and you immediately think, if you have a problem, what happened to me at that age? And it's always totally different. I wanted to try and tell them about what it was like for me as a child. And my son, Matthew, sounded rather interesting. I think he would have enjoyed having the same sort of childhood. But my daughter was very home-loving, and she used to say, oh, it must have been awful, you know, you had to leave your house and your garden and everything. And I wanted to explain to them that, in fact, as far as I was concerned, and my brother, it was terrific. I thought it was far more interesting than staying at home, and I liked going to these different countries and learning these different languages, and I loved being in Paris. Apparently, once we were living in this very grotty flat high up in Paris, and I was looking out of the window with my father, and apparently I said to him, isn't it wonderful being a refugee? Which must have struck him as a bit strange in the circumstances. But I wanted to tell them about that, and that was what the book really was. And, of course, that part of my life ended happily in that my father sold a film script to Alexander Korda, and on the strength of that, we came here.
If that period as a child ended, as you say, happily for you, I think the music that we're going to hear next is inspired by the fact that, of course, it didn't end very happily for millions of others.
Well, we actually got out of Germany with 24 hours to spare. I'm 89 now, and this entire life I have had is because of that. And I'm always conscious of the 1.5 million children who didn't get out. I mean, I don't think about it, but you can't ever quite dismiss it from your mind that you've been given something that all these people didn't have. And, well, this says it all, what happened to them.
Natime vi ozrejem je makšemo.
Jewish memorial prayer sung by Moshe Heschel with the Naima singers, conducted by Mark Temelis. And that actually was recorded at the first International Holocaust Memorial Day ceremony at City Hall, Westminster, in 2001. It might be nice to follow that Jewish memorial prayer with the piece that I know you felt was one of your father's favourites, because it was played at his funeral.
Yes, the Beethoven 7th, the second movement. He loved it, and he asked that it should be played at his funeral. He was able to plan it because he was sent back to Germany by the Control Commission to raise the Germans' morale, which was very low at the time. And they thought if he did what he'd done before the war and went to the theatre and wrote about it, it would cheer everybody up. And so they flew him over. I mean, this was 1948, in a troop plane, it must have been. He'd never flown before. He thought it was wonderful. Of course, he was unknown in England, but as he got off the plane, there were journalists and photographers, and he was given a great lunch. And that evening, he went to the theatre, and as he walked in, the audience stood up and applauded. It must have been all very, very moving. And he saw a performance of Romeo and Juliet. I don't think it was very good. And then he went back to his hotel, and in the night he collapsed and had a stroke. And one of the journalists who was looking after him found him. In the morning he was on the floor. He couldn't get up, but he could speak, and he knew exactly what had happened to him. He said, "I've had a stroke." But it wasn't the performance. The performance was bad, but it wasn't that bad.
So he was a critic even then?
He was a critic even then. But he'd had various minor strokes before and always recovered. He didn't recover from this one. He was partially paralysed. And he also felt that he couldn't think as well as he had before. And so my mother helped him, and he took some pills and died. But of course, he was able to plan his funeral before that. And one of the things he wanted was the slow movement from the Beethoven 7th. And this was in Hamburg, and the Hamburg Orchestra played it for him.
The slow movement of Beethoven's Symphony No. 7, the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Carlos Kleiber. I'm glad to say, Judith Carr, that you keep writing, and you keep writing wonderful things and drawing wonderful things. I think this book, My Henry, is very much to do with your late husband, Nigel, but known as Tom to you.
Yes.
And it's about a lady sitting with her cat. And maybe if I might just read the first few pages, it'll give just a hint. They think I'm sitting in this chair just waiting for my tea. In fact, I'm flying through the air with Henry holding me. My Henry died and went to heaven, but now he's got his wings. They let him out from 4 till 7, and we do all sorts of things. It's things we've never tried before that are the greatest fun, like riding on a dinosaur, which I had never done. Gives the flavour of it. So I can see that you've always managed to take things from your past and do something creative with them.
Yes, from people I've been fond of, more than fond. Tom, I met him 60 years ago when he was a sort of dog's body writer for the BBC. I think they just stopped paying him out of the petty cash in television. And he was doing all sorts of stuff, like adapting stage plays for television. And he also wrote dialogue for some vegetable puppets which had been abandoned by their creator. And I think he himself played the onion. He had been an actor before. He'd also won the Somerset Maugham Prize with a volume of short stories. And about a year after we met, they asked him to write a 6-part serial for television, which was in its very early days. And he said, why not make it science fiction instead of the sort of stagey things and, you know, living rooms and terraces and things that they'd had before. And it was called The Quatermass Experiment, and directed beautifully by, produced by Rudolf Cartier, who found some music for it, which has always been associated with it since. In fact, at one time I was listening to the radio and they said they were going to play this music, and of course it's Quatermass, they said. So we got married on the strength of this. It was done on a shoestring. I mean, Tom and I had to do the special effects because there was nobody else to do it. It's about a rocket that goes up into space. This was 8 years before anybody had sent a rocket anywhere. And it goes up with 3 people in it. And when it comes back, they've merged into one. And something else, of course, has got in, an alien. And it's gradually grows into a sort of vegetation that takes over the whole thing. And it's set in the London of the time. And towards the end, this vegetable alien thing has invaded Westminster Abbey. And the unfortunate set designer read this scene and said, all right, you wrote it, you do it. So Tom bought a guide to Westminster Abbey and cut out a photograph of Poets' Corner, and they had it enormously enlarged, and he told them to cut a little slit in the top. And then I sat for 2 days with a pair of wash leather gloves on my hands, and he stuck bits on, sort of twirly bits and sort of leafy bits. It was very complicated. It took 2 days. And then when the thing went out live, of course, he stood on a box behind this board with Poets' Corner on it on the other side, and stuck his fingers through the slit at the top and very, very, very slowly moved his fingers. And the entire nation was terrified. And this was Quatermass. And this is Quatermass music.
Thank you.
The theme music for Quatermass, but also known, of course, as Mars, the Bringer of War from the Planets by Gustav Holst. London Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Sir Adrian Bolt. I can see how that might have been quite creepy.
It was perfect, absolutely spot on.
And the music, Judith Carr, that your husband actually came to like very much, was in fact Russian, wasn't it?
Yes, it was very interesting because he grew up on the Isle of Man in a not particularly musical household, so he hadn't really heard much classical music. I mean, in those days you had to really seek it out. It wasn't thrown at you from all directions as music is nowadays. I was very interested because as soon as he discovered it, he was fascinated, and he skipped over all of it. Bach, Beethoven, Mozart, yes, okay, you know, but what he liked was the 20th century Russians. He used to play it while he was working, and he used to play a particular thing day after day after day while he was writing a particular thing. And Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet was one I remember hearing.
Thank you.
Dance of the Knights, or the Montagues and Capulets, from Romeo and Juliet, the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Claudio Abbado, music by, of course, Prokofiev. Well, earlier in the programme, we had part of Don Giovanni, and we're going to end, Judith, with Mozart, music from the Mass in C minor.
The only reason for that is that, as far as I'm concerned, it's the most beautiful music I know. I can't remember when I first heard it. I play it again and again. It never gets any less interesting. It's beautiful.
The Kyrie from the Mass in C minor, Köchel 427.
Yeah.
The Kyrie from the Mass in C minor, Kakul 427, by Mozart. We heard Sylvia McNair, soprano, and the English Baroque soloists with the Monteverdi Choir, directed by John Elliott Gardner. It must be very satisfying for you, Judith Carr, that the literary genes have passed on to Matthew, who is such a fine writer.
It's a huge joy, and I was very glad that Tom lived just long enough to read the manuscript of Matthew's last novel, When We Were Romans, and he said it was a masterpiece, which was wonderful.
And your work is being disseminated ever more widely. In fact, I think just now we've seen the opening at the Lyric Theatre in Shaftesbury Avenue of a stage adaptation of The Tiger Who Came to Tea with music and lyrics by David Wood. So it must be very exciting to have all these things.
Well, it was quite extraordinary. I mean, I thought they were mad wanting to do it, but I thought if anyone could do it, it would be David. And the book takes 3 minutes to read. How can you make it last the best part of an hour? They've made it look exactly like the book. The set is exactly like my drawings. It's very touching. These tiny children sit completely transfixed.
Well, Judith Carr, thank you for coming not just for tea, but for giving us an hour of the music that you feel passionately about.
It's been wonderful.
Judith Carr was talking to Michael Barclay. Next week, at the same time, Michael's guest on Private Passions will be the artist Mark Wallinger. Private Passions is a classic arts production for BBC Radio 3, and the producer of today's programme was Chris Marshall.
He's a man with a unique voice, instantly recognisable. My composer of the week is Michael Nyman.
Very pleased to be presenting a vast diversity of my work over the next 5 days.
The old favourites and some music that you almost certainly won't have heard before. Join us this week for Michael Nyman as composer of the week at 12 noon and again at 6:30 in the evening on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and also online. It's 1 o'clock. Time now for the news, read by David Cornett.
Andy Murray will seek to make tennis history this afternoon by becoming the first British player to win the men's singles at Wimbledon for three quarters of a century. His opponent, Roger Federer, is aiming to get a record 7th singles title in the tournament. Play is due to start in an hour's time. The business secretary, Vince Cable, has launched a fierce attack on British banks for not doing more to help small companies to expand. He said their lending policy was throttling the recovery of British industry. The shadow chancellor, Ed Balls, is pressing the government to try to stop Barclays' departing chief executive, Bob Diamond, receiving a multi-million pound payoff. He wants ministers to speak to Barclays' shareholders. Officials in Afghanistan have found a video which appears to show a member of the Taliban publicly executing a woman. The film shows a woman who's accused of adultery being shot dead in a village 60 miles from Kabul in front of a cheering crowd. The Environment Agency says flooding in the southwest is easing, but 26 flood warnings remain in force across England. People have been trying to clear up after the waters have receded. Dozens of homes were affected when two rivers in Devon rose to record levels. Detectives in West Yorkshire are investigating the murder of a 19-year-old in a village near Huddersfield. The young man was stabbed to death in Marsden. An 18-year-old was also wounded and remains in a serious condition in hospital. Two men have been arrested. Police think that a crash in which two people died on the M4 near Newbury in Berkshire may have been caused by a car driving the wrong way down the motorway. Two drivers aged 82 and 48 were killed. The FA have confirmed that Ryan Giggs will be the captain of the British football team at the Olympics. Giggs is one of three overage players in the squad. And the weather, scattered heavy showers will develop over England and Wales, but some places will be dry and bright, particularly later. BBC News and weather at 2 minutes past one.
read by David Cornett. Well, in an hour's time, our Sunday concert is a performance by the Nash Ensemble of Mozart's Piano Quartet in G minor, Alexander Gerz's Horn Trio, Bridges' Fantasy Piano Quartet, and Brahms' Horn Trio. But now it's time for the Early Music Show with Catherine Bott.
Hello and welcome to the National Centre for Early Music in York. We've got a live audience of discerning early music lovers, some of the usual suspects and some new faces. And I'm just going to stop for a minute to mark the last appearance on air at the Early Music Show because he's 10 years old and he's retiring shortly of Nathan the Guide Dog. So thank you for being such a music lover all these years, Nathan. The place is absolutely packed. And everyone's awaiting a treat. In today's programme, first treat, I'll be talking to Festival Director Delma Tomlin about what's in store, and playing live for us today, second treat, to illustrate this year's festival theme of crossing borders is L'Aventura London, whose director Jacques Osmo will be telling us about the Portuguese and Brazilian music we're going to be hearing throughout the show. So let's get going right away with music. This is Ganinha, Minha Ganinha. My Ganinha, read my heart, being in love isn't good for it. L'Aventura London with singers Sandra Medeiros and Joana Seara, starting today's live early music show from York with a little 18th century modinha attributed to Domingos Caldas Barbosa. Barbosa came to Portugal from his Brazilian home in 1763, and he may have been the man who brought the Modinha to Europe. The Modinha was once described as the music best calculated to throw saints off their guard and to inspire profane deliriums. So with the Synod of the Church of England meeting in York, I think we should have some more right away. This is a lyric we can all identify with. It says, maybe the good times have rolled already. I wish I could have more of them.